Hello again, and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth, as always, is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We've been doing business for many moons, 20-plus years. Like I said the other day, we're heading into our 22nd fiscal business year. That's the way they count years in business, I guess. That's all you need to know. That's all that really matters, I suppose. But I started out as a severely addicted coin fanatic. That was in corporate America, climbing the corporate ladder. I was a banker and eventually had the blessings from God of getting so obsessed with a hobby that I kind of had to get out of corporate America and go do my own thing. And God gave me a pretty good route on that. That's a long story, I suppose, for another day. I hope you're having a happy new year. Apparently, there is some bad weather around the country. And I really get a kick out of this stuff. Where they, climate change is a dandy, isn't it? So they've got this bomb. What's it called? Bomb cyclone. The bomb cyclone. By the way, Coins Plus 444-0044. We're always buying and selling all forms of rare coins, precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. We like to build precious metals and coin portfolios. We like to help you preserve and protect your capital in a conservative biblical financial method. We basically follow biblical standards, and they're consistent, timeless. People get caught up. Boy, here I go. Bouncy, bouncy. Real quick, what I was going to talk about is, and I'll touch on the second part here in a minute, this bomb cyclone. I don't know if you watch the news. You never know. A lot of our listeners are too smart to listen to the news because they know it's all rubbish. But they say there's such a thing as a bomb cyclone storm. And, they put these crazy names on it. And essentially what they're saying is it's going to get really cold. And, and they talk about it like it's the worst thing that's ever happened in history. They act like now that they're hung up on climate change, they act like winter is this terribly unexpected tragedy. It's not supposed to be like this. When I was I was flying through the airport in Denver, Colorado. And I was in a bookstore, and it was cold. This was, obviously last winter. And I said to the gal that worked there, she said something. We mentioned how cold it was. We stayed at the hotel right next to the Denver airport because United Airlines, in their infinite wisdom and terrible customer service, bumped our flights and, of course, wouldn't put us up in a hotel room. And they said that they basically offered my wife and I separate flights. We were flying together, and they offered us, and we'd been upgraded. We upgraded ourselves for first class, and then they bumped our seats, as you've probably seen on TV, they do, and then said that they tried to compensate us by giving us other seats on a different flight, clear in the back, separate, in the middle of people, and on and on. It was just bad, and we're like, look, that's not a comparable level. And then they said, well, we tried to help, so you're stuck here for 2 days, and we're not going to compensate anything. So we had to stay in a hotel for a few days or a couple days waiting for this terrible customer service nightmare to end. Actually, what they tried to do, the flights were full because of weather delays, and they tried to put my wife and I were flying to Florida, and they tried to put us on each on separate flights, and we refused, and they said that because of that we waived our right for them to cover. You get the point. Big corporate America. after that, they had all the TV publicity for dragging the doctor off and using the police to beat people up. And we were very glad to see the publicity because we'd been treated so horrible there. But enough of that. Don't fly United. They're the worst. My point was that when we were living, essentially, for a couple days in and around the Denver airport, I had a gal. We mentioned how cold it was because our hotel was right next to the airport, and we had to walk back and forth outside, and everywhere we went was kind of like that. We were walking because of the situation. And she said, I said, yeah, it's sure cold out. And she said, yeah, this climate change is terrible. She said, climate change is just ruining the weather. And I said, this isn't climate change, it's winter. And she said, no. No, this weather is caused by climate change. It would never get this cold if it wasn't for climate change. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You're in Denver, Colorado. I mean, folks, the brainwashing is getting to such an extreme point. Of course, she was a young gal. They are pumping these empty, worthless agendas into people, into kids at levels. They are literally changing a generation. It's not climate change. It's generational change. It's brainwashing change. And that is so true. I have to do my little miniature old man rant, but I cannot believe the gall, ignorance, foolishness, asininity, whatever you want to call it, of the left. And the vitriol and garbage that they will spew on TV anymore, I'm absolutely baffled. I am truly blown away that their level of, I don't know if I want to call it ignorance or, brazenness or what, but the things they'll say and the foolishness, and I don't want to make this show just a political rant, but I don't know how closely, various listeners keep up with news and politics and current events. But man, folks, you got, here I am. I mean, anybody can get on the air and say, isn't it terrible out there? But honestly, folks, there is so much going on. The corruption of the FBI, Robert Mueller, all this Trump investigation. Now you get Steve Bannon, Trump White House advisor and campaign manager at one point, president, I think, or senior editor and president of Breitbart News, which is, they call it alt-right. I mean, with that term, I don't know what it means, but apparently it's a bad term because I'm alt-right. And it's maybe it means you're all right. I hope that's what it means. But, he's been blackballed and tarnished and of course, he's an alcoholic and looks like he's been run over by a train. And now he is part of this new book. I think it's called Fire and Fury, about the Trump White House, which he worked under until he got fired. He absolutely is trash talking the Trump family and on just the sickest level of disloyalty. It's very sad because Steve Bannon served in the military. He's a military man, and you would think he would understand loyalty. There is nothing sicker than disloyalty, to be candid. Ex-employees or whatever. I mean, there is a certain level of loyalty their loyalty is a virtue. It is a good thing. And I'll tell you, folks, in life, life is very short, and the world is very small. And going around like Steve Bannon is and intentionally burning a bridge to create drama in order to create a fiasco that he can financially capitalize on by maximizing book sales is utterly foolish. It's just pure foolishness. Wise men do not do such things. Proverbs 12:15. A way seems right to a fool, but a wise man seeks counsel, or something along those lines. A fool thinks he's right. He is, what he does makes just great sense to him, and he really doesn't care about wisdom and input and counsel and that sort of stuff. A wise man, and there's scripture about that too, but a wise man proceeds cautiously. A wise man is careful. A wise man watches his steps. He doesn't burn bridges along the way. He controls himself. He exercises the biblical, precepts, the fruits of the Spirit, and one primarily being love is patient and kind. God is the one who handles vengeance. We don't. We can defend ourselves. I've seen people absolutely slaughter that scripture, and a number of scriptures that they slaughter without getting into the Hebrew or Greek. I've heard, faiths that are Christians that are against war because it says, "Thou shalt not murder," in the Ten Commandments, or "thou shalt not kill" is what they say. That's not what it says. The actual word for it is "thou shalt not commit murder." Thou shalt not take the life of a man, an innocent man is what it means in Hebrew. That's where the Ten Commandments, that's what it meant in Leviticus. You have to think, how in the world can you say on one hand, don't kill, and on the other hand, God has his people kill according to the Ten Commandments? And people, I've heard all kinds of justifications and things. It's from misinterpreting what the real intent and what the real meaning of the scripture is. God says you don't kill innocent people. You don't take the life of an innocent person. That's obvious. But taking a man's life in self-defense, in conquering the wicked, or however you wanna view it, is, for better or worse, is very biblical. Christ came and he did change the whole mood and tone of things. He passed his covenant on to the Gentile believers. God's people, the Jews and Israel, were, they were inundated by a whole different set of challenges and foes and things that we hypothetically aren't. The main thing that Jesus said is, as Christians, he knew from his wisdom that operating with autonomy and patience and love and kindness apparently gets you a lot further than trying to be a warrior. Warriors, if you aren't the king, warriors eventually lose. I mean, it's just a sad fact to reality. Nobody wins all the time. I spent years in martial arts. I enjoy watching some martial arts, UFC type stuff, and a lot of people think it's the stupidest thing they've ever seen. But I'll tell you what, even the best fighters on there, the best of the best, reigning champions, they all lose eventually. Every one of them is going to lose. And most of them have a run of losses on their record. It's, it's just the way it goes. God knows that. So as a Christian faith, if we're out trying to be the tough warriors, first of all, we're not spreading the gospel in Christ's terms. He changed, he brought us a new covenant. We're definitely not spreading the gospel if we're out there in anger and in hostility, and we will be crushed, we'll be hated. At that point, you end up standing up against regimes that God's not telling you to stand up against. It just creates all kinds of problems. War brings mayhem. Bad things happen. War is ugly. War is terrible. People get hungry for war. We get war hawks in the constituency, the electorate, the people, as well as our current regime, or our current administration in the House and the Senate. I mean, we're in the middle of some tough stuff in this world. We've got good old Kim Jong-un, the one that Donald Trump, he said Donald Trump something about how he's a lunatic and a tyrant. And he said, hey, that's not very nice. I never said you were short and fat. And then the other day, Kim Jong-un was bragging about his nuclear button on his desk. And Donald Trump came back and said, well, my nuclear button is bigger. And it's a joke. And then the media goes crazy. How could he dare? It's so unprofessional. But it's true. We got acclimated so bad for so long by Obama. It really is sad because we, as Americans, are seeking an effeminate, passive-aggressive male. Not just passive, passive-aggressive. In other words, it's like he who knows what's right to do but fails to do it, for him it is a sin. Things that Obama could have done to preserve and protect God's word, God's people, Christians, those kinds of things that he chose not to do are every single bit as faultable, if that's a word, as doing evil. Allowing evil to exist, getting out of the way, opening the door for it, it's exactly the same thing. So we've got, he had 8 years of an impact. There's a whole new generation coming up that knew him as their president, that set the tone for being cool and everything's chill. Now we've got the Trump man who's 70-plus years old, I think, and he's very harsh and brash and off the cuff and somewhat impulsive. And, you know, I'm over the years or over the time, I've begun to conclude somewhat that Trump may be a lot more brilliant than we know. He knows how to control and contain the dialogue. I would expect some pretty big information to come out soon because, like I said, that Steve Bannon book is really, it's a trash tabloid full of lies about the Obama White House, or the Trump White House, specifically for the purpose of fiscal financial gain. He just wants money. But Trump played right into it because it seems that people know he's a reactive hothead, which is sad. And so he played into it, threatened to sue, but not only threatened, he is suing. He tried to put a cease and desist on the book. All those things just absolutely amplify the book sales through the roof. So he is selling books, and then you get the conservative news stations like Fox. Because of what Trump did, oh, now they're carrying on about the book. Pretty soon I saw on TV today, they've got the book in their hand. They're talking about the book that everybody wants, and, you know, because it's just full of filth and trash. It down-talks Trump's family. And like I said, where's the loyalty? You know, Bannon did not get Trump into the White House. Trump got Trump in the White House. Trump brought Bannon on to help him connect with that Breitbart crowd. He knew that Breitbart was a conduit to the alt-right, whatever it is. The name is foolishness to me. But to the uber-conservatives, which I believe the majority of my listeners are, very constitutionalist, relatively libertarian. I've heard people freak out when I use the term libertarian. I don't know what you have in mind, if that bothers you, but libertarianism is constitutional freedom. It's allowing a man to do what he can with his own life without the government interfering, dictating this, dictating that. That's what I firmly believe in. The only part of libertarianism I'm semi-opposed to, relatively strong in certain cases, is their opposition to war. And I started a minute ago about different faiths that I've seen that they use a miscalculation or a mistranslation of the commandment about committing murder or thou shalt not kill. They actually apply that to war. And they say, well, it's because our wars are not righteous wars. Now, there's a time that you are to be loyal to government officials. If we're fighting for something on a national security level, then you darn well better be ready to take up arms. People that just swear they won't carry a gun, that they're just convinced guns are bad. You know, this is just not biblically consistent. So the argument becomes, well, the Old Testament and the New Testament's different. Jesus taught us different. There is a light amount of truth to that, but it is not at all. I never once read where Christ condemned anybody who was in, you know, who was a soldier, who'd been to war, who was even a police officer. None of that stuff was condemned by Christ. He said, when the centurion asked, and folks, I'll tell you what, centurions were not good people. Centurions killed for a living, and they were very good at it, which is why when they say one of the theories of Jesus rising from the dead was that he wasn't dead, is, wow, foolish. The Romans specialized in killing people. They were very good at it. But Jesus told the centurion, again, a very harsh, really technically murderous type position. He asked him what he should do. He said, whatever you do, do well. And you have to, you know, you got to think of that and realize that to some people who lived back there, he was giving a thug, if you will, in their opinion, a government overreach specialist permission to continue to maim and hurt and all that. But that's not at all what he was trying to do. He was trying to basically send a message. Number one, it isn't what you do for a living that dictates you. It's what's in your heart. And he was showing that you can walk with him and still be a centurion. That's a big call. I mean, that's an interesting concept to really think about that, especially when you know a lot about Roman history and the level of disdain and destruction and hatred. And I mean, they were absolute warmongers. So anyway, that's Jesus's philosophy. He said, you know, he basically told them, you know, continue doing what you do as, and so on. And I could look that up, but I won't right now. I started looking for it, and I think I could get pretty busy in the scripture. I think I'll grab some notes I've got here. One thing I was talking about earlier is this climate change, the impact of climate change. We are literally globally spending trillions of dollars a year on climate change. Why would we be so gullible? Factually, there is no evidence that we even impact the weather, the climate, on a global basis whatsoever. The problem is people confuse weather with climate. They're actually not the same. Weather is the individual measurements at a given period in time. Climate is the trends and the overall, you know, humidity and heat or whatever in certain areas, the amount of rainfall and all that kind of stuff. So bad weather has no bearing on bad climate. You can be in a good climate and have bad weather. If you get bad weather in a good climate, it doesn't mean that everybody drove their car too much and ruined the atmosphere. It just means weather changes. In the overall scope of things on a universal basis, the band of temperature changes and severity of our weather on this earth is probably one of the tightest, well, it's hard to say because we don't know what's out there, but I'll tell you, it's a very tight bandwidth. And if you understand the power of the cosmos and the fact that it is 0 degrees Kelvin is 270 degrees below zero Celsius, extremely cold, outer space. That's where molecular activity stops. That's how cold it is in outer space, of course. So molecules, it's so cold, molecules literally stop moving. On the other end of the spectrum, you get near the sun and you are literally experiencing heat, levels of heat that are so amplified, you know, 1 × 10⁹ power Celsius, or it's actually like 7.94 × 10⁹ power, which means it's like 8 with 9 zeros after it degrees. So whatever that'd be, like 8 billion degrees Celsius, which in Fahrenheit, as if it matters, would be like 15 billion degrees Fahrenheit. You know, that's how harsh it is. They say that when you're in outer space without the atmosphere to protect you, space junk that's flying that can literally be invisible, a tiny bolt will come flying at you 50,000 miles an hour. They say it will penetrate its way through anything, like the most powerful projectile imaginable. When we get inside the atmosphere of our Earth and we begin to examine what God's put us here, we realize the atmosphere, we live in a liquid. We are literally a liquid-breathing organism. We don't breathe air. We can call it air, but when we think of air, we think of suspended molecules that are dry. But in fact, we are not like that. We are under incredible amounts of pressure, 12 to 13 pounds per square inch of body mass is how strong our atmosphere is on the Earth. That's why if you're released in outer space, you will literally explode, because your body is designed and conditioned to sustain this phenomenal amount of pressure. Incredible. I mean, when you start to think of the absolute pressure of 12 pounds per square inch, it is unheard of. Those of you who've fished and brought up fish from the deep, fast or unexpectedly, they literally explode. I mean, it's not a pretty sight because of the pressure change. They're so used to that pressure way down. Once you get down past a certain point in the ocean, you get to a point where you get suspended animation, where the water above and the water below separates into two different types of water, and you can suspend in space there for an infinite period of time. If you are, I think it's about 33 feet underwater. If just that's a number that sticks in my head. I could be dead wrong. If you're above that line, the water pushes you up. If you go below that line, the water begins to push you down. Very interesting attribute of the ocean. There's so much incredible physics on this Earth, I can't even begin to describe it to you. But what we live under and the conditions that God's put us here is very interesting. One thing that's very troublesome is there's countless statements by NASA that we do not know how to fly to the moon. I am not going to get into conspiracies that we never went to the moon. I haven't really researched them. I've watched a little tidbit here and there. There's a number of things that I feel that I could readily refute that weren't, you know. But at the same time, there's interesting information out there. And again, I'm not taking a side, but I, as you know, if you listen to me, I try to be open-minded. And I could see the logic of why we would have lied. There's a huge list of, facts, reasons, evidence, that we never went to the moon. And I'm telling you, I am not taking a position on this. I had no intent of talking about it, but it is something that is quite shocking, if you want to be candid. I mean, one is they have video of a waving flag on the moon. Now, listen, I am repeating to you information that is readily available. Not taking a position, not taking a stand. I don't have the knowledge. I really don't even have an opinion. I only heard of this, you know, in the last couple of years. And I thought, well, that's a concept I've never considered. At first, my knee-jerk reaction was, that's ridiculous. Forget about it. Then I looked into it a little more. And there is a flag that is waving on the moon in their photography. I mean, literally waving like it is in the wind. There is no sense. It says, you know, in the first moon landing, which was broadcast on television, it says viewers could clearly see the American flag waving and fluttering as Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin planted it. Okay? There was no atmosphere. No atmosphere, no wind. No wind, no flapping flag, right? It's quite interesting. It says the obvious problem here is that there's no air in the moon's atmosphere and therefore no wind to cause the flag to blow. There's endless, it says, explanations of how this, to disprove this phenomenon as anything unusual. NASA claimed the flag was stored in a thin tube and the rippled effect was caused by blah, 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 whatever. There's a lack of an impact crater where they landed. They've got pictures of around their spaceship. There is no sign at all of an impact crater where they landed, which they say would most certainly have to be there. I can't believe I'm even covering this today, folks, but you might as well. It just, you know, and if you knew all the government lies that they've told the people and you understood how bad they really are, you wouldn't be surprised. There is so much stuff that has been, you know, that our government's been involved in. And the problem is the government is people, but the problem is the people have leaders and the leaders have infinite money and they have a system that backs them up. And it's not something that can ever be broken down into, you know, true and not true or evidentiary and conjecture and things like that. There is, oh boy, in history, there's all kinds of, you know, massacres that are false. Operation Northwoods, where top U.S. military leaders had plans to commit acts of terrorism on U.S. cities to blame other countries. The Gulf of Tonkin, which was a false flag event where the U.S. exaggerated a confrontation with North Vietnam in order to get the people to understand why we're moving into war. You know, there's GM claimed its cars were safe, but resisted introducing safety features such as seat belts for years. The government supported them with all kinds of knowledge. It's very similar with pharmaceutical companies. We're getting these super bugs, the flu virus and everything, and from vaccines. I mean, vaccines are hurting us in a huge way. People, you know, kids are getting SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. They're getting all one other, you know, they're, I don't know. I could get into that. I got to be careful. There is terrible attacks on Vietnamese cities, Watergate, you know, put together to destroy Nixon, which, by the way, is what they're trying to do to Trump now. I mean, they're holding everything against him. This book is saying he's childish and unreasonable and that just doesn't care about anybody but himself and, you know, just terrible things, folks. And, you know, we need to realize that the Bible tells us to respect our leaders. we have to understand we are commanded to respect our leaders. The way the moon landing thing, I'll buzz through that. Like I said, I had no desire. There's multiple light sources, multiple shadows in their photos on the moon. Now, what would be their light source? You've either got the sun or the earth. So, you know, there's only one real strong light source, which is the sun. The earth's a light reflection. So it's fair to say that all the shadows should run parallel to one another. But on the photos from the first moon landing, that is not the case. Videos and photographs clearly show that shadows fall in different directions. And they, you know, conspiracy theorists suggest that this mostly means that there's multiple lighting sources that are present, which suggests that the landing photos were taken on a film set. The reason that this would have happened if it did is because we were in a space race with the Russians. And I mean, and we were so desperate to win, and we were afraid they were going to get to the moon before us, so we possibly, theoretically, faked it. Okay? Again, not going to go there. I'm already there. Not taking a position, just throwing out information for you to consider. Please do not think that this is a position that I hold. It's just intriguing information. There is what they call the Van Allen radiation belt. In order to reach the moon, astronauts have to pass through what's known as the Van Allen radiation belt, okay? There's a belt that's held in place by our magnetic field, the Earth's magnetic field. It stays perpetually in the same place. The Apollo missions to the moon marked the first ever attempts to transport living beings through the radiation belt. Okay? Conspiracy theorists, if you want to call them that, contend that the sheer levels of radiation would have easily cooked the astronauts en route to the moon, despite the layers of aluminum coating the interior and exterior of the spaceship. If you've seen the quality of the exterior and interior of the spaceship that supposedly traveled to the moon and back, it too is so suspect. People do not take serious enough that trip to the moon, how far-fetched that would be. It's so far, it just seems, you know, the more I study it, the more unreasonable it becomes. So NASA's response to it is that they emphasize the short amount of time it took the astronauts to traverse this Van Allen radiation belt, which basically means they received only small doses of radiation. There's an unexplained object in one of their images. It makes very little sense. So after photographs of the moon landings were released, theorists were quick to notice a mysterious object, which if you do some research online, you can find it. In the reflection of an astronaut's helmet from Apollo 17 or Apollo 12, the object appears to be hanging from a rope or wire and has no reason to be there at all, leading some to suggest it's an overhead spotlight typically found in film studios. The resemblance is questionable, they say, given the poor quality of the photograph. But the mystery remains as to why something would be suspended in midair lack of air. You know, you can't have it in midair if there's no air on the moon. The lunar module in other photos appears to have an extension from it that matches the photo. So the object still remains totally unexplained to this day. And so as you get deeper and deeper into the reasons why they theorize we never went to the moon, you've got, you know, slow motion walking, hidden cables. So they believe it was shot in a studio, and the conspiracy theorists had to account for an apparent low gravity conditions, which must have been mimicked by NASA. It's been suggested that if you take the moon landing footage and increase the speed of the film 2.5 times, the astronauts appear to be moving in Earth's gravity. As for the astronauts' impressive jump height, which would be impossible to perform on Earth's gravity, they say hidden cables and wires, props, were theorized to give astronauts extra height. And in, you know, some screenshots, outlines of alleged hidden cables can be seen. I'm looking at photographs of it right now. But it's very vague. So the rest of the reasons, you know, there's no stars. Their pictures looking back show virtually no stars. Which is no clouds, there's no atmosphere. You should have the best shot of the stars, better than anywhere that you'd ever see on Earth. In addition, the astronauts were never asked to do any research or gather any data on what they saw when they looked up at the night sky, because man had never been able to do it before that, just, you know, to see what's up. I mean, to really find out what's up there. The total lack of stars in any of the photographic evidence, there's no clouds on the moon, no stars are perpetually visible, so stars should be perpetually visible and significantly brighter than what we see through the filter of our atmosphere. The argument is that NASA would have found it impossible to map out the exact locations of all the stars for the hoax without being, you know, messed up, and they were rushing and everything else. And therefore, they just left the stars out. Some photographs are high quality, and still no stars are shown. I've seen it. There's a sea rock. There's a rock with a big C stamped on it that looks really bizarre. And it's a C. I mean, it is a C-shaped, like, brand on the rock. It's way too perfect to be unlikely, you know, to be unlikely. So, or to have gotten there by nature with a C stamped on it. And then there's, you know, layered crosshairs where you've got, where cameras used by astronauts during the moon landings had a bunch of different crosshairs, to aid with scaling and direction. And they're imprinted over the top of all the photographs, and some of the images clearly show the crosshairs behind objects in the scene. That implies that photographs may have been edited or doctored. There's that. And then they have this duplicate backdrop, like they use multiple sets. That's kind of the granddaddy of them all. You look, it's the identical, and I mean identical landscape. And in the one on the moon, they've basically removed all the rocks and added in a lunar, you know, whatever that capsule's called. So anyway, it's just, it's, if you do some research, it is very compelling. It makes no difference. The only thing is that, well, it doesn't really matter. So there's different aspects of it, different ways to look at it. It doesn't change, you know, who we are or what we do or anyway, et cetera, like that. A couple other things, folks. I don't know how close. I assume most of our listeners are pretty knowledgeable on the whole flu vaccine thing. Don't get it. It's probably too late. You probably already did. Don't buy the lie. It doesn't work. You know, we had the mumps outbreak in North Spokane last year. starting at Meade High School, 85% of the school was vaccinated. They had almost 100% contraction rate of the mumps. And they basically claim that was because 15% of the kids were not vaccinated. They weren't immunized. There's other fake, you know. It's just all fake news. It's huge money. The government's pushing it all the time. The biggest problem that's happening now is there's a direct proportion. I've seen some graphs recently is, the level of vaccinations, the quantity and the prevalence of it is growing rapidly, as is the prevalence of the flu, and the severity of the flu is relative to vaccinations being given. So to me, in my opinion, I do believe they're building superbugs, and I think that it's so lucrative they don't want to stop. I think that we're getting into so much high-pressure stuff out there, even 10th Amendment states' rights stuff, where even the marijuana thing, do I use it? Heck no. Do I like it? Heck no. Would I use it? Heck no. But eventually, it'll end up that way. So there's just so many different aspects of things to look at what they're doing to us. When you look at, we don't even know what's coming in our flu vaccines. They're being cultured in the livers of rhesus monkeys, which is another story. I've got a lot of these and other stories for another day. Trying not to get too hammered down on any one thing, and I've gotten hammered down, believe it or not, on whether or not we ever walked on the moon. The real kicker for me on that really had me questioning was watching a video showing six separate NASA astrophysicists saying we don't know how to get a spaceship past our atmosphere up to the moon. And when asked the logical question, what do you mean? If we could do it 50 years ago, why can't we do it now? They said, well, we had the technology once, but we've lost it and have to refine it. Which means, it's possible we never went. Or it's possible we went later. Or something. Stuff to consider there for sure, for certain. I'm going to hit real quick here. Some notes I've got for the show. I apologize. Okay. I guess business-related stuff. People have been asking me. The frenzy in the stock market is really affecting people, frankly. It's going wild. It's going crazy. I'm sensing chaos, catastrophe, agitation, agitated spirit, greed. People are calling, should I jump in the stock market? Should I jump in? They're begging me to be their soothsayer and their guru. I had a guy say to me yesterday, or he said, boy, that thing could, I think, he goes, I think I'm going to get in. He said, because, quote, I think the stock market could go up another 10 or 20%. And I said, exactly. And he goes, yeah, exactly. I said, and how much could it go down? And he just looked. I said, how much could it go down? I said, are you familiar with previous graphs? Well, the answer is no. They hadn't looked at previous graphs. The market doesn't just lose when it corrects a percentage of its high. It seems to always drop to 6,000 or 7,000 on the Dow. At least for the last, number of years, maybe 15 years. And so if it dropped to 7 and we're at 25,000, that is whatever that is, 80% or, I don't know what it is. Let's do the math. It would probably be about 75%, 70-some percent drop to get back to where we were, okay? So if you can lose 70% of your money, and no one disagrees, they all know it's a hype bubble, but you might gain 10 to 20%, but you realize it's more likely to be over, what do? You proceed with extreme caution and carefulness. That's what you do. You don't jump in. You don't get crazy. You don't get wild. You don't lose your bearings. You don't lose your focus. You just stay. You stay the course, as they say in days of yore. You stay the course. And this is not the time to be jumping out. When you get into what's really going on in the world today, I obviously try to do my fair share of research on this kind of stuff. And I look a lot at, you know, what is holding us all together. And I'll tell you right now, folks, it is positive consumer sentiment. Trump is proud to have the market roaring the way it is. But folks, people don't, I'm sorry, but right now, just do not, don't get in. Do not buy in. Don't buy into the I wish I would have, could have thing. That is honestly reckless, in my opinion. It's utterly reckless and foolish timing. The upside's minuscule. The downside's huge. You know, we've had this market run hard and fast like this. And this, you know, we are approaching some sort of peak. There is so much pressure, so much of the system opposed to Donald Trump that we're going to see some kind of a setup, some kind of a correction before the election. And we're coming up on our first set of midterms in another year. The campaigning's going to start soon. And there, you know, typically the left wins the year after, you know, you get a majority sweep. Trump's getting just terrible publicity. The bottom line, to keep it simplified, folks, right now, in all honesty, we've got absolute inflation running out of control. One of the primary reasons that I believe that the market has run so high is I have recently been looking at charts, which I do, that show a absolute direct proportion between real inflation and changes in the dollar, changes in metal, and growth in the marketplace. We have had such incredible hyperinflation under Obama that we are literally looking at a scenario where it is very reasonable that the market would adjust to these levels, that, as I've said in the past, the market will crash up. I don't want to be a doomsday guy. I want to be a wise guy. I want to give you good, sound advice. Spoke to a person today, a beautiful lady that has really been confused, just wants, you know, has her nest egg. She's retired, trying so hard to make the right decisions and just trying to turn over every stone, every rock. And the poor gal has talked to so many people. There's so many curveballs that even at one point she says, what about, you know, such and such tax lien, like leverage investments? And I'm like, are you serious? As a believer, you want to, you know, get liens on somebody's house, pay off their tax liens, and then they owe you the money. And if they don't pay you through this corporation back properly, then you're repossessing the house and trying to take advantage of the gains there. Well, the fact of the matter is all that stuff is a scam. It's a scam. The life insurance policies of terminally ill you can invest in, all of it is a scam. It's not federally regulated, not that that's the greatest thing in the world, but people can take you for a ride like you've never been on. The granddaddy of all deception, folks, and I've mentioned it over and over, and I'll do it one more time, probably again and again. Annuities. Please do not buy annuities if you don't understand the logic, okay? The logic is if that you have $100,000, you give them your money, and if they want to annuitize it, older folks like this idea, they want to have a fixed income. So they want to give them all their money now and then get a certain amount back every month. If you do the math without getting statistically deep on you, it doesn't pan out. They're utilizing the mortality tables, showing when you will decease, which we all do, And in America, the average female is about a 75-year lifespan, males about 74. They're betting in general on the fact that most people are going to die within a very strong standard deviation of the high point of that bell curve. And what happens is people will get all kinds of miscommunication. They'll say, I have $200,000, and this annuity says that they are going to pay me, say, 5% a year, you know, or whatever it may be, 7% a year, $14,000 a year on my money. I'm going to get it, you know, for la-la-la, and then, you know, if I die, there's a beneficiary clause, which is always limited. The fact of the matter is, folks, when you do the math, if you just put your money in the bank and pay yourself the same amount, you'll come out way, way, way ahead. They have those stacked so that even after you get the interest amortization, they've got a minimum 20% buffer when you are, you know, 3 to 5 standard deviations past regular mortality, which maybe I don't mean to go over everybody's head. What I'm saying is you don't give someone $200,000 to have them give you back 7% a year as long as you live. But if you die, they'll continue to pay somebody else for 5 years or whatever. There's all kinds of different plans. You keep your money in your hands. I've discussed with people endowments where, you know, they go to Hillsdale College or something, which is a great school, and they give them all their money, and then the school promises them a monthly income or stipend until at a supposed good interest rate until they die, and then the money goes to the charitable fund. All these things sound nice, and they people say, I like the security of it. The security of what? Of getting a check every month? We're out of time. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.